at satellite operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact me, your air traffic controller, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Ursula Rudenberg in New York City. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.
Coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with me. I'm Robert North. Stay tuned. We'll follow up on what happened on Halloween evening downtown.
Just like Mama's kitchen, you were welcome anytime. She made you feel like family every time that you dropped by. She served up country music, but a lot of people came just to see Miss Vicky at the place that shared her name. She's the modern day Miss Kitty. She lit up the town with the sparkle from her diamonds and her Subaru evening gown. The working country singer had a special place to play until the door stopped swinging at the Hall of Fame Cafe. The marshal came a-calling with papers in his hand. The pedal steel was silenced, no drum beat from the band. The door was locked behind her, still she left with style and grace. They boarded up the cafe, but she never lost her face. She's the modern day Miss Kitty. She lit up the town with the sparkle from her diamonds and her Subaru evening gown. The working country singer had a special place to play till the door stopped swinging at the Hall of Fame Cafe. They put her out of business, but she won't ever stop helping those who need her. She's the cream of the crop. She still loves the music, and if there is a way, guitars will be playing at Vicky's new cafe. She's the modern day Miss Kitty. She lit up the town with the sparkle from her diamonds and her Subaru evening gown. The working country singer had a special place to play until the door stopped swinging at the Hall of Fame Cafe. We're all counting on Miss Vicky to start again someday.
And that was Voices of the Homeless, Modern Day Miss Kitty. And, hey, nice tune. You're tuned to Free Radio yourself, again, at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. This is a two-hour show which deals with the civil rights issue, or lack thereof, around homeless folks and other folks who are, well, outside, poor, whatever. On the line with me right away, we have someone who's got to get to a meeting, so I'm going to hustle forward and put her on. We're talking to Morella Mountain from, is it Seaside, Sand City, or Monterey? Where are you, anyway?
Marina.
Marina. I knew I was wrong.
Heart of the Monterey Bay.
Now, I know that we ran into each other years ago down in Santa Monica, where you worked with a food program that now has been forced indoors by the great NIMBYs of Santa Monica, or is it Venice? I don't know, somewhere in that area. And you're still kind of commuting between Marina and Santa Monica, right?
That's right, Robert. I'm currently working with HOPE, Helping Other People Eat, and we provide poor and homeless people with a hot, nutritious meal on Wednesdays and Thursdays in Santa Monica. I am not really interested in talking about the food program per se, because we're still in ongoing negotiations and have been asked not to do so by our mediator.
Right. Well, actually, that wasn't why I called you, though. I have a thing or two to say about divisions around that issue, but that's another story. Let me see. We have another call coming in at the same time. I'm not sure if this is about you or about what we're doing. Can you hold for a second?
Sure.
Let's see what we got here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi. Is George there?
No, you're actually calling. You're calling the middle of a live show. What can I do for you?
Sorry, sweetie. I'll try and call her on her other line.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
There you go.
And actually, there is this. In case anyone is listening, you can call in and ask questions of Maura here about what we're talking about, which it has to do with, well, I'm interested in what's going on in Monterey, the Monterey County area with homeless folks, plus the recent spraying for the light brown apple moth that's been going on up there and will be happening in Santa Cruz, I guess, starting on Sunday with today's announcement that the courts have turned down an injunction on that issue. What's cooking in your neck of the woods there, Maura?
Well, I'll tell you, Robert, the spraying gun for the apple moth is, I think, of grave concern to people that are without housing. We have had two rounds of spraying. We had one in September, which I was fortunate to miss. And the second one just recently, we had three nights of spraying. And I have to say that the planes are flying so very low that I have heard a number of complaints. The first is that you can't sleep because they start flying at 8 o'clock at night, and they fly until 4 or 5 in the morning. And they are flying literally, you know, 500 feet off the ground, maybe higher than that. It's hard to judge that, but very close to the ground, very loud, prop planes. And they missed everything. I was coming out from a meeting in Marina last week on Wednesday, the first night of our spraying, and I came out of that meeting at about 8:30, and I had been hearing the of the little planes flying over, and they basically fly back and forth and back and forth. It's quite annoying. But in any event, I had taken a large breath of air to. Hello?
You still there? Hello? I can hear you.
I'm sorry, perhaps you can still hear me. I don't think I can hear you.
Oh, yeah, definitely I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can.
Go for it. And so okay. You're saying you took a nice breath of air and it suddenly was rather moist.
Well, as I came out of the meeting, I heard the noise inside and didn't really, you know, put two and two together. And so I was talking with somebody and I said, gee, it's starting to rain. And they said, no, that's the chemicals from the spraying. And so I took a deep breath to run about three car parks over in the parking lot. And I was shocked at the restriction in my breathing. I have no known breathing problems. And I was gaping for breath when I got into my car. And after three or four, maybe five deep breaths of, you know, unpolluted air, it was much, much easier to breathe. And I had that same experience the following night coming out again from another meeting. And I only can imagine the devastating consequences that people that are outdoors, without housing, without shelter, getting, you know, 8 or 9 hours of this chemical in their lungs. I mean, you can't not breathe. So I really can't really fathom what will occur for people. I would strongly recommend anybody without housing to seek shelter under a permanent structure, or, you know, really, really shore yourself up. You know, get some cardboard over you or whatever it is you can do to avoid those chemicals entering your lungs. I mean, we've had, you know, a lot of reports of individuals getting sick, going to the hospital, in the housed and the homeless population here in Monterey. The other concern, you know, as I'd mentioned before, is the inability to be able to sleep. These planes are just going nonstop from night to morning.
Well, don't you have a sleeping ban anyway in Monterey? At least I know in Santa Cruz we do. Aren't there laws that prohibit sleeping in your vehicle and that discourage homeless people from trying to sleep at night?
I am not personally familiar with all of the rules and regs here in Monterey County. I know that I participate on a regular basis with the iHelp program, which is a mobile homeless shelter program. And they have several tour buses, and they have several pickup sites both in the valley, Salinas Valley and Monterey Peninsula. And we have 30 churches on each side of the peninsula that volunteer their sanctuaries and house and feed homeless individuals, primarily male, on a nightly basis, which really is a wonderful program. I don't think we're able to accommodate all of the need in our county because it is so large. I participated in the homeless census two years ago, and I think our count was at about 6,500, which I think is an underestimation. But it's really hard to, you know, identify everybody that's either couch surfing or in between and SROs and things like that.
How many beds does iHope or floor spaces, because I assume it's not all beds. But,
And it isn't. It is.
How many people does it accommodate?
I think it shelters about 80 people a night. So
Well, 80 out of 6,500, that's not bad, you know, right?
Well, what I can say is it's a first step. And that would be times two. So that would be, you know, 160. It's certainly inadequate. But relative to the
I'm sorry, is there much harassment of folks who are outside for simply falling asleep? In Santa Cruz, as you may know, we have laws that criminalize it. In the county, we have other laws that criminalize it. We've been trying for decades to change the law to acknowledge that for many people, affordable housing is a vehicle or a tent in this county and probably in a lot of other counties as well. And I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, I guess this is a little bit off the subject, but I've got the expert here on the line. I wanted to make sure we grill you as closely as we can, you know. In other words, do you know if have you heard of people being hauled into court for falling asleep at night or camping at night or inhabiting a vehicle, as it's discreetly put here in Santa Cruz County?
I don't have any firsthand knowledge here in Monterey County.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that you're more involved with food programs and than you are. Actually, I know you're working in Santa Monica on the food program. Are you actively involved in social service work here in Monterey County or there in Monterey County?
Not specifically. I'm trying to bring some of the benefits and resources I've developed in Southern California here to the Central Coast. So I'm networking with some of the enterprises and trying to help them shore up some of their service and good needs through some of the donors that I have in Los Angeles and some of the federal and state.
You're trying to funnel some money to the social service providers in Monterey County?
Getting toothbrushes, toothpaste, personal care items, blankets, shoes, socks. You know, all of the day-to-day necessities that we need and, you know, kind of leveraging some of the relationships I've developed in Los Angeles and trying to export them here to the Central Coast.
Maybe some showers to spray down, hoses to spray down the homeless after the spraying that's coming up, or that has come up already, I guess. I mean, we're looking at this happening on Sunday, and we've contacted the Homeless Services Center here, or I should say an advocate against the spraying, a woman named Inca, who called the studio a week ago, did try to reach Ken Cole, the Homeless Service Center, and various other employees there, and she got message lines. That's what people always get when they call these places, at least usually, that's what I've heard. And there was no call back that I've been made aware of. What did homeless services in the area, if any of them said anything about this spraying? Did they speak up on behalf of the homeless, or were they...
I didn't see any outward acknowledgement or conversation in the media here.
How about among you must know some of the homeless services if you're trying to funnel money to them. Did any of them squeak up, so to speak?
No, I didn't. I was not in communication with anybody relative to the spring.
Well, at least we're getting you to speak up now. That's for sure. If we regard you as a homeless service, or at
well,
least
well, my I guess my gravest concern is, you know, we don't know what this is going to do for folks. We have had health challenges reported from the spring, and people without housing are in grave, vulnerable danger mm-hmm. of ingesting involuntarily these chemicals. And I would strongly urge any homeless person listening to this to stay out of harm's way as best you can, and you know, have some kind of something that's not penetratable. You don't want a newspaper because it can probably soak through that.
Mm-hmm.
You want some kind of covering that's going to shelter you.
An umbrella, a tent. But I imagine tents are not too legal in Monterey County unless you're on private property, would be my guess. But again, I guess I should start researching Monterey County more myself. It's only one county to the south.
Yeah.
So I know that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, met on Wednesday. We passed a resolution. And let me see here. We went on record as opposing the spraying, given the uncertainties about it, the lack of testing, and also apparently the inefficacy of it. We weren't even sure that it was going to do what it said it was going to do, and also the questionable nature of the light brown apple moth itself. There have been questions raised as to how serious a pest it really is. There's controversy about that, but the main thing is to do with the health and safety concerns of particularly people, vulnerable people like you're talking about, who are outside. We demanded that we were going to make it a demand, and we have demanded that, not that we've communicated the demand very widely, but the demand is and now being made that homeless people be given places to go indoors when this spraying is happening. Not that that's going to protect everybody anyway. I mean, I think it's residual, and it keeps getting repeated. I understand that there's no cutoff date for this spraying that's been specifically authorized, as far as I know. And we also would encourage homeless people to consider lawsuits against the government and demands that the government deal with any medical consequences that come up, though this can always be very tricky, and I'm not quite sure if even people who are in houses have been successful in pressing any demands, although I guess it's been pretty recent this spring in Monterey County. Any word on that?
No, I have not heard of any litigation that's been filed or... Mm-hmm. I don't have a legal background, so I'm really just not sure how to advise people to move forward. And I'll tell you what, Robert, I need to be mindful of the time, and it's going to take me a few minutes to get to my 6:30 meeting.
All right, well, make sure you wear your raincoat when you go out. Actually, I guess the spraying is over in Monterey County, but if you come to Santa Cruz on Sunday, wear some thick clothing.
I will indeed.
Thank you. We're talking with Maura LaMountain. Maura, if people want to get in touch with you for more information, is there a number they should call or an email address or a website?
Absolutely. They can call me through the Making Change, the homeless newspaper office in Santa Monica, California. Our number is area code 310-391-1432. And they could also reach me on the web at Moira_Hope. HOPE at earthlink.net.
All right.
And just as a personal note, Robert, Jennifer is back, and you can reach her at makingchange@earthlink.net.
Cool.
All right. Thanks so much.
Hey,
keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye, Maura. And phone lines are open in case you want to call in, 427-3772. I haven't been following a lot of the protest against the light brown apple moth, to my chagrin, or because I'm weary and doing other things. But if anybody wants to follow up on this, has any new information regarding this, and particularly in terms of how it impacts poor and homeless people, please let me, call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number, or you can try the alternate line, 469-3119. Also coming up later in the show, I'm expecting a phone call from African-American tarot card reader and outspoken big mouth, Jason Pascal. Jason is an articulate and sometimes extremely crusty street, what do you call him, hustler? A fellow who is beloved by some, hated by some. Many find him amusing. He was a fixture of the street for a couple of years until he was driven away, actually hauled away through the machinations of Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker on an ancient marijuana charge. He came back, and they started busting him for other things, and they got a rather unique stay-away order, which required him to stay away from Pacific Avenue, except he could go in the back door, boss. You know, he could go into the back doors downtown, and that was kind of nice, and kind of really puts an interesting color on the issue of racial profiling or racism in Santa Cruz now that's done, although one has to say that there is a sort of an equal opportunity discrimination that is being leveled against those who are considered to be undesirable on Pacific Avenue, who have any kind of problems with the police. The judges are encouraged to give these restraining orders either as a condition of probation or as a condition of sometimes simply prior to trial, although I think it's usually after trial and conviction. And I know there was one guy who was given a stay-away order all the way up and down Pacific Avenue because he got into a violent encounter with Robert Steffen, the pink lady, the umbrella man guy. And he was in the wrong, this guy. I mean, he hit the guy. He hit Robert. But he tried to apologize, make up for it. Robert had apparently also done his, I'm going to pretend you're not there and, you know, I mean, essentially invade your space, which Robert does. And, you know, it's not just your space. It's all our space. But there is a certain amount of personal space around each one of us, which some people are rather sensitive about, particularly people who are homeless outside who don't have the luxury of a private space to withdraw to. And I think he got into an altercation with Robert about Robert touching his stuff and he punched him. And that was an assault. Or a battery, at the very least. And in any case, he pled to it, but he got this bizarre probation condition, which I think may have been altered. But it's an example of the kind of extremity where you suddenly get, you know, if you steal from Long's, you get a stay away order from Long. You don't get a stay away order from every place in town. That's not neither fair nor judicious nor appropriate, and it's, you know, the punishment does not fit the crime. The idea of increasing penalties is a new favorite with the Rotkin-Matthews Council, the Riley-Coonerty Council. That's the new mayor, the old mayor, and the new mayor soon to be, Bookshop Santa Cruz manager Ryan Coonerty. It may be fashionable with Matthews, Coonerty, and Robinson, the three council members who dish out a lot of strange new police procedures, rules, and such in private with their downtown issues task force that none of us are invited to be privy to. Can't really read the minutes of much because they don't really have minutes. They have agendas. They don't really have minutes that I've seen. I could be wrong about this, but that's my recollection. And they cook up such things as the parking lot panic law or the parking lot trespass law, as they call it. So what we had previously thought was public space is now, you know, not public space. It's to be trespassed on if you happen to want to stand under a tree in a parking lot area or talk to a friend in a vehicle there or relax in your own vehicle for 16 minutes. You can't go in there at all unless you're walking directly through if you don't have a vehicle or bicycle. But even if you do, you have to be gone within 15 minutes or you're technically guilty of a rather costly infraction trespass ticket, which is this is going to go into effect within 3 weeks. November 22nd, 23rd is when the formal date, a month after the second reading of that law at City Council, which passed a couple weeks ago now. And it's an example of this repressive mentality, which we also saw in Halloween evening, the idea that we can vent our frustrations and somehow deter crime by increasing fear and anger. I actually believe in anger in a certain sense, because I think that people should be angry when injustices are visited upon them. by the legal system, by the police department, by merchants, or by other individuals. You know, I mean, if somebody is harassing you downtown, whether it's inside or outside of a parking garage, that's bullshit. That's inappropriate. That's wrong. You have a right to defend yourself and also to seek community help in that. But to start pushing laws that criminalize everybody, increasing massive police force so that one intoxicated guy making a speech hauls out 17 cops to subdue him is a kind of a fascistic solution which goes much further than any kind of reasonable response to a particular episode. And that's what I saw last night on the Halloween Cop Watch that I was a part of, and unfortunately very few other people were a part of it. Oh, community of Santa Cruz, I really encourage you to get involved and to keep your connections with other people, because you may think you can do it all alone by yourself, hiding out or just rushing to work and rushing back or hanging out with your friends. It's all going to be okay. You don't need to make the kind of connections that would have us all realizing we have to fight back against this stuff. But I don't think that's how it works. I think what happens is, as they said during the Revolutionary War, rumor has it, if we do not hang together, sir, we shall all surely hang separately, which I think was one of Tom Paine's statements during the war against the British in the 1770s. What do we got here? Just following up finally on that light brown apple moth stuff. All Huff really was able to do, we're a very small voice, and we have a small number of people. We meet every Wednesday. Everyone's invited to come to the meeting. It's in the cafeteria in the county building in the basement at 9:30 in the morning. Goes till 11:30. And there's also a meeting of an allied group, the Human Rights Organization. It's 2 o'clock every Saturday, and that's at the Firefly Cafe at 131 Front Street. But we try to think of small actions that encourage people, give people the option to become involved. We raise our voices against things that I think people are much too often silent about. I mean, last night it was the Halloween excessive force activities of the police departments of this area, including the Santa Cruz Police Department, the Sheriff's, the Highway Patrol, the Watsonville Police Department, the Capitola Police Department. They were all stalking around downtown, protecting us, you see. And there were some people who really felt there was protection. If you go onto the Sentinel website, you'll see all these personal attacks on me and others for suggesting that the police force was acting in any other way. And, of course, they don't deal with the arguments and the realities. They simply attack the people, like myself, who say, hey, you don't need all this force. In fact, it's counterproductive, increases in a fear mentality, makes everybody sort of vulnerable to the belief that somehow the police are the saviors in this situation, when it's not. The community is the savior in this situation, not the police department. Police department can be helpful. It can play a role, you know, although there are some who believe that the less role the police department plays in terms of the use of a threat of lethal force or harmful force, the better. As I mentioned before, soon we'll be hearing from Jason Pascal, who had a rather unfortunate history in Santa Cruz. He was rather outspoken, you know. He was hitting on the women downtown, not to the extent that he was ever charged with any kind of sexual harassment. Though no doubt there were some who thought so. A lot of people liked his approach. Some didn't. But you know, we're talking about a society where there's a variety of approaches. And we're not talking about a compulsive job situation where you have to deal with a boss every day who's, you know, reaching into your skirt or making lewd comments. So in public, there's a variety of styles, and I'm not recommending Jason's style. I'd be embarrassed to do it. I wasn't, it's kind of a street ghetto style, as I might call it, or a ghetto. It's an African-American kind of. Maybe this is my own racial profiling, but it's a mode I don't use. But should that be the basis for him being arrested repeatedly? Should that be the basis for his recently being charged? That's the question. And to me, the answer is pretty clear. No, I don't think so. And when he criticizes the businesses and the police department for doing so very publicly and rather vocally on those public sidewalks that Ryan Coonerty assures us are public forums, if you're not Greek or academic, then he has a right to do that. And in fact, you know, it may be uncomfortable, but the natural flow of the interactions he has with the public will have its results. I mean, I'm not particularly hot on religious preachers downtown, but I'm even less interested in having police repress that or merchants be able to snap their fingers and remove that. Now, admittedly, I don't have to listen to it 8 hours a day from a shop. So, you know, I'm in a position where I have a limited situation, but I can always close the door of the shop, you know, turn up the music if I want. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I think we have to have a downtown which allows for all kinds of different folks. And hopefully Jason will be calling in to talk about that. And if he doesn't, I'll be giving the update that he gave me earlier this afternoon. Let me play a little bit of music now. I'm also hoping, by the way, to hear from a Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco. I spoke with Eli up there to get the latest on what Gruesome Newsom is doing. That's Gavin Newsom, the preppy, yuppie, fluffy, gentrified mayor of San Francisco is doing to criminalize poor people in Golden Gate Park and thereabouts and burnish his image. And he's got a non-contested election coming up. I mean, it's contested, but by people who have a fraction of the money he does and very little of the name recognition. So he's likely to win. And we're not going to be talking about his election or him particularly, but more about the policies that the police, the community, and, well, frankly, Newsom is also pushing, and what the Board of Supervisors is much more liberal and tolerant in some respects than Newsom is doing about this, which organizations like the Coalition on Homelessness, which publishes the street newspaper Street Sheet, as distinguished from Street Spirit. And we have a caller that could be our very person. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, this is Eli Hernandez.
Hey, Eli, I was just talking about you. It sounds like you better turn off your radio or your whatever you got on there, your computer, because otherwise you're going to get confused, I think.
Yeah, I'm cool now.
Okay, now I was just mentioning, and of course you heard me talking about San Francisco. What's your position at the Coalition on Homelessness, and what is the Coalition on Homelessness?
Well, I'm a volunteer at the Coalition on Homelessness right now. The Coalition is a grassroots organization. I hate to say this, but unfortunately, the Coalition has been open for 20 years now. The reason why I said unfortunate is because homelessness still exists.
Hear, hear. Now, are you also homeless?
Currently, I am.
And how long have you been homeless?
A couple months.
Now, is this because you're a bum, drug addict, junkie, social misfit, disabled loony who somehow got out of the, you know, we need a 5150 you to set you up with supportive housing and teach you how to write checks again and organize your life? What's your problem, sir?
I had an eviction on my record, which prevented me from getting housing in the city, which I'm still currently trying to fight that eviction. If you're homeless in the city of San Francisco, if you have an eviction, if you have a warrant, you are automatically denied for public housing or other benefits that can be available for you to help exit homelessness.
And
there's many, many restrictions that this current administration has put forth in the city to prevent somebody from exiting homelessness.
Now, so what kind of a warrant did you have that prevented you from accessing public housing?
No, I didn't have a warrant. I had an eviction on my record.
An eviction. And that meant that at some point you didn't pay rent or you got into a dispute with a landlord or something to that effect?
Yes.
But you have a form of rent stabilization in San Francisco, too, right? Unlike Santa Cruz, which couldn't give a shit how high the rents go. What's the situation in San Francisco regarding the rent?
Well, rent varies different part of the neighborhood you happen to live in. If you are, well, I hate to say this, low income. The general population lives in the poorest of the neighborhoods, the Tenderloin, Bayview, Hunters Point, you got Western Addition. Unfortunately, if you're poor in a city, it's very difficult, if you're a family living in an SRO 12 by 15 room, to get an affordable apartment. It's very, very difficult. The rent is high in San Francisco.
Well, wait a minute. We've heard some wonderful programs from Gavin Newsom, and then there's a 10-year plan by the Bush administration to end homelessness. The funds are pouring in. What is going on? Why isn't the, you know, isn't this money reaching the poor? Isn't this being translated into housing and jobs?
There's money? Where? Gavin Newsom cut funds last year. Well, during this, the recent budget he just helped pass, he cut funds for services. He cut housing funds. He cut substance abuse funds. How is someone supposed to exit homelessness if the mayor of San Francisco continuously cuts funds?
Well, hasn't he done things like provide very exciting homeless courts that will allow homeless people to plead guilty to everything and then get counseling and methadone treatments?
This new court system that Mayor Newsom is proposing, he calls it the Criminal Justice Center. The coalition, we call it Poverty Court, because this court will focus on the poorest of the city residents, the homeless. If you happen to be homeless, you are an automatic criminal, according to SFPD, because if you're in violation of the law, you're a criminal. Ergo, being homeless, you're a criminal, sleeping on a sidewalk, sleeping in the park. Where are you going to go if you get turned away from a shelter?
So what's...
This whole entire court system is a political ploy. This is my personal opinion. This is a way to further waste city funds, waste city taxpayers' dollars on a new existing court system when this money could have been easily put into housing. Why did Mayor Newsom ask the U.S. government for $1 million back money for this new court system when he could have asked for at least $1 million or $10 million for housing, low-income, affordable housing? We need to eradicate the criminal justice system as it intervenes toward getting housing. Why do we need police?
Well, I guess those some people on the street might say to you, wait a minute, the police department is there to protect the most vulnerable. Homeless people are the most vulnerable, so they're there protecting homeless people from violent criminals of all colors.
Well, that is kind of odd, because several weeks ago, I saw a police car pass up somebody dealing crack cocaine and approached a homeless person drinking a beer. So is this the police department's idea of protecting the poor and homeless?
Well, they were helping the man to break his alcohol habit, which is no doubt part of his cycle of homelessness.
Another meaningless statistic. There's no fact that every single person who is homeless is a drug addict, alcoholic, or mentally unstable. There is no facts based upon any kind of surveys or research that states you're homeless, you're mentally unstable. You're homeless, you're a drug addict. You're homeless, you're an alcoholic. There is no facts to prove this.
But isn't that, in fact, the growing consensus of opinion among the power elite in San Francisco?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
In other words, doesn't that way of characterizing homeless people as skunks, punks, and drunks, as it used to be put here by a right-wing talk show host, Dag, his name was, on KSCO, aren't homeless people regarded as either a kind of a combination of alcoholics, junkies, and lunatic asylum rejects? Isn't that the sort of all, of course, with the greatest compassion, mind you, you know, that we're only here to help them deal with their addictions, their dual diagnosis problems, and so forth? I mean, isn't that the word, isn't that what the power elite is saying? It's not really housing that's a problem. You have to show them how to use the key to get in the door and how to make sure they go poo-poo in the toilet instead of on the floor, something like that.
Every single person who is homeless that I know, that I interact with, is tired of getting the runaround in the city. They're tired of being told, you need to go here, then you need to go here, then you need to go here. What the city needs to do is stop all these little loopholes and the hidden loopholes and just say, hey, if you want to exit homelessness, you need to, here's some housing right here. Here's some education if you need education. If you have a mental problem, we'll hook you up with a psychiatrist. If you have a drug and alcohol problem, we'll hook you up with counseling. It's up to you. How do you want to get out of homelessness? What do you think you need? This city has not asked the residents what they need to get out of homelessness. Mayor Newsom says he's went to Golden Gate Park. He's been to the Tenderloin. He's heard everybody who's homeless and what they need. There's a difference between hearing and listening. When you hear something, you only get noise. When you listen, you're actually inputting the information that you have received. You're actually taking things and putting a plan into action.
Well, I've talked to Jennifer Friedenbach recently, and actually she spoke on this program, about Newsom's latest plan, or perhaps it's the park's latest plan, the Department of Recreation and Parks, whatever it is, to make increasingly punitive and drive away homeless people who are whose only alternative seems to be Golden Gate Park, or that's where a number of homeless people are. First of all, how many homeless people do you estimate there are in San Francisco, as far as you know?
There is no exact count, really. If you can recall, last time there was a homeless count, there was approximately 14 test cars, which I mean by test cars were people who live in vehicles. And if memory serves me right, they only counted about half of them, which means there is not an exact count of homeless people in San Francisco. There are families in the city who have maybe 4 or 5 kids living in SROs. They go uncounted. There are people around here that go to the coalition that said they were never counted.
So what do you estimate?
I have no answer for you on this. You can walk down the street, and you can look across the street when you cross the street, and one person may be homeless, and you never know. There was no exact count, no way to really tell unless you actually talk to somebody.
Well, surely as coalition members have been talking to people. I mean, I'm looking for a range. We're talking 10,000 to 20,000, 20,000 to 100,000, 100,000 to... In other words, you got about a million people in San Francisco, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to give a range, what would you say the possible range of homelessness was?
Well, I'd have to say about maybe 6,000 to 10,000.
Okay, because I know I've actually heard a higher estimate. Are homeless people? I know homeless people. I've told in Los Angeles, after the Jones decision made it legal to sleep in Skid Row, police stepped up other kinds of busts down there, driving people away from Skid Row in order to redevelop the area, because they wanted, you know, turn it into a modern homeless free zone.
Why? So, I have to interrupt you here.
Yeah.
Why does the police have a problem with somebody who is homeless drinking a beer, but they were chatting away with people walking in and out of art galleries with wine? I mean, what's the police problem? If you have nowhere to go in a city in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Portland, Salem, Sydney, Australia, if you have nowhere to go, why do you need to be criminalized for being homeless?
And, of course, you and I both know the answer to that, which is that the police serve a certain class of people in San Francisco, I imagine. We call it in Santa Cruz the Downtown Association, the business folks, conservative residents, who don't really give a damn whether you drink or not, provided you do so away from them. But if they don't want you to see you do it, they don't want their kids to see you do it, and they don't want tourists to see you do it because they believe that drives away the tourists, isn't that?
Oh, I know that person's name, NIMBY.
Correct. That's Mr. and Ms. NIMBY to you, sir. I guess, do you have any updates on what's happening on people being hassled for, you know, trying to survive in San Francisco by sleeping in Golden Gate Park? I guess there's shelter space in theory for what, a couple thousand homeless people out of that 6,000 to 10,000 figure you've given me?
Well, recently people have been arrested for being turned away from shelters and they have no other place to go. They find a place in Golden Gate Park and they get arrested for sleeping. It's a basic human right to sleep. Ask any doctor on this planet and they'll tell you sleep is a basic human function.
Well, unfortunately,
why are the cops breaking this, man?
Well, in Santa Cruz, I have to tell you that we have no doctors who have stood up to say this, and we have a city council which explicitly denies this and makes it a crime to sleep after 11 o'clock at night on any public property whatsoever. There are no sanctuaries for people who of our 1,500 to 2,000 homeless. So I think in all fairness, your homeless people should also be penalized. I mean, why should we be the only ones to suffer?
Human beings are human beings. Whether you're rich, you're poor, you're middle class, you're homeless, you're in the military, it shouldn't matter. We're all human beings. We all need to be treated with respect and dignity.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't matter.
Let me ask you then, I know that until recently, and perhaps even now, the coalition has some lawyers who, when homeless people get these sleeping in the park tickets, sitting on the sidewalk tickets, whatever they are, you know, I don't know, leaning against a door front and the hate tickets when the stores are closed and nobody would give a shit except the Coal Valley Neighborhood Association is running around, you know, stirring up vigilante hostility to homeless people. They go in, these Coalition on Homelessness attorneys go in and get the tickets dealt with. Now, I recently read in the Chronicle a day or two ago that is now being fought by the district attorney or by the city attorney. Is that right?
Sorry, excuse me, I was eating leftover Halloween candy.
Uh-oh, I've got to watch out that Halloween. You probably get your teeth button out there. Did you catch what I was saying?
Yes, I did. When somebody receives a citation, like I said, it's a waste of tax dollar funds. The city's wasted over $6 million on, I believe it's $6 or $7 million. I forgot, Sister Bernie from Religious Witness, she came out with a count. I don't have the exact number in front of me. But it's like over $5 to $7 million of taxpayers' money has been wasted on these citations. When somebody receives a citation, it's because they happen to be poor and homeless, ergo a criminal again in this society. What the Coalition of Homelessness does is there's volunteer lawyers that represents them in court and pleads necessity the case.
Yeah, Eli, I know this. My question is usually these cases have been solved pretty quickly, right? They were thrown out. But I've heard that from the newspapers, from the Chronicle, that now they're being contested more vigorously as part of the new quality of life, or should we say quality of death program, put forward by Mayor Newsom.
What the district attorney's office is basically pissed off about is losing. Because they cannot get any more money from the taxpayers' dollars. If we keep on having people improving to the judges, these tickets that are being written are false. People should not be cited for being homeless. The district attorney's office is pissed. They're losing. They know that they are in the wrong. The criminalization of the poor and homeless needs to stop.
So I guess I'm looking for, you know, if there are any updates that have happened in the last month or two that have changed the situation at all. I know that there was concern that new laws were going to be put into effect, making it even more repressive for people in Golden Gate Park. There was a whole campaign orchestrated by Nevius, what was his name? C.T. Nevius, C.L. Nevius, the...
As the Guardian stated, the obvious?
Chronicle, yeah. The Chronicle writer who has been screaming about needles in Golden Gate Park and linking it up with homeless people with no... you know, evidence to correlate,
no proof.
To show that there's this correlation whatsoever, or that even if there were, that it's the kinds of things he's calling for are helpful, though he does do an interesting suggestion of there being injection rooms, which I think is a great idea, although...
Safe injection sites are wonderful because there are trained physicians on staff right then and there in case anything happens.
So how far is that coming? Explain to the community here what's a safe injection site. I know it's being done in Vancouver and in some places in Europe. What's that all about? Any information on that?
A safe injection site is a place where somebody who is in their addiction at not ready to get off their addiction, it's a safe place where they have trained medical physicians, doctors, nurses there, and they have safe, clean needles. They will assist you in... with your materials, they will let you do your own thing, inject it yourself, and for crack pipes, they have rubber tubes, so you won't burn yourself, it won't transfer any hep A, hep B, or hep C viruses. It's very safe and clean. If you happen to overdose, there's doctors right there and there. It's a wonderful place if somebody is still with an addiction, because human life is valuable, and we all have to realize, when we realize ourselves, that we want to live. And when somebody's in an addiction, they're not ready for that yet. So this is a good start.
Well, these injection rooms haven't begun yet, and they've been proposed.
Not currently in San Francisco yet.
Right. In fact, they're nowhere in the United States, as far as I know. But I think it's a great idea. Now, I found this article in the Chronicle, and I probably think you know that I may be burdening you by bringing it up because it sounds like you've given what answer you know about. But this is a story by Robert Selna, and it's in the Monday edition of the Chronicle. San Francisco prosecutors have quietly begun enforcing citations associated with homelessness more aggressively after hearing community complaints that the crimes were on the rise and believing that defendants were getting off too easily. Quote, in interactions with neighbors, people were complaining of quality of life type crimes, urinating in public, sleeping in doorways, defecating on the street, said Assistant District Attorney Paul Henderson. And this is what I wanted to point out now and ask you about. For the first time, the district attorney has begun assigning prosecutors to make sure they are in court whenever defense lawyers challenge quality of life citations handed out by police. The crimes, which are less serious than misdemeanors, include blocking sidewalks, public drunkenness, trespassing, camping in parks, and offending merchants. I'm sorry, that is not a crime, the last one. It actually is a crime, but it hasn't got a code section. In the past, San Francisco prosecutors, like those in other California counties, would leave it to court commissioners who preside over vagrancy and minor street crimes to impose penalties in the form of fines and to issue warrants for defendants who fail to appear. When lawyers presented legal arguments against the citations, cases were dismissed, Henderson said. The defendants weren't being held accountable for transgressions. So your attorneys are from the coalition, including, I guess, Elisa Della Piana. Is she one of your attorneys?
Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights.
Yeah, that's what it's costing the city a lot in police resources and court resources, she's quoted as saying. And of course, there are arguments against this, which you and I both agree on, I'm sure. But my question is, has this change happened? Are you or are people in your office noticing the district attorney is showing up to make sure that the guy who peed on the sidewalk, even though there was no bathroom nearby, gets her or his comeuppance?
Well, let me backtrack here for a second. I need to ask you a question about that article.
Sure.
Who exactly was urinating and being drunk in public? Was it people who are homeless or people from the bars? That's a good question to ask. The reporter never actually emphasized that. Was the people reporting homeless people or drunk people?
Well, clearly,
out of the bars?
Well, clearly, I mean, I catch your drift too, and don't disagree with the point you're making, which is, and I think in Santa Cruz is the case also. You know, the problems in the parking lots and garages, I think, is caused often by people coming out of bars and so forth. And the problems that, that homeless people are blamed for, they're a nice scapegoat because they're so visible and they're kind of frightening to people because they think, I might be there and who's that strange man on the street and all that sort of thing. But the issue, again, that I ask you is this happening? Is the district attorney doing this now and was he not doing it before? Do you know?
I do not have that information firsthand. I do not go to court.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to get more info on that because I think, you know, this is a growing trend. I think they're trying to do homeless courts in different cities, and I'm afraid it may be coming to Santa Cruz. This isn't about homeless courts. This is ordinary criminal prosecutions, but it's a way of trying to fight the citations that your attorneys are trying to get dumped. It's bad enough people have to get jailed for this stuff or have to the indignity of being pulled over by the police and, put in under arrest, because that's what happens when you get a citation written. You don't necessarily get put in handcuffs, but you are, in fact, not free to leave. You are in fear of some kind of mistreatment. You are publicly being humiliated for essentially doing what everybody else has to do.
That is why the Civil Rights Project Coalition on Homelessness conducts its outreaches, to ensure people that, hey, here's your rights. There's little pamphlets that the coalition hands out. It explains your basic rights. It's called When You're Homeless, Knowing the Law. Some of the basic laws that cops love to harass people with happen to be the penal codes, park code 3.12, that's camping in the park, or NPC 22, blocking the sidewalk. You got BP 25620A. Open container.
Right.
These are some of the ones that the cuffs love to harass people with. If somebody's recycling and they have an empty beer can, they're in violation of the law.
Right. And we've had the same kind of situation in some rather absurd circumstances come up actually last night at Halloween. And I notice here that in the same article that I was reading you from, religious witness with the homeless people said in a review of public records earlier this month, the city has spent, San Francisco has spent more than $7.8 million filing and adjudicating these citations, you know, whether they're sitting on the sidewalk or urinating or defecating, since Gavin Newsom came into office in 2004. So they're spending a significant amount of money. And according to this, police don't typically arrest homeless people for these citation-related warrants because they know they can't pay the fines. The alternative is throwing them in jail for a day, but that's unattractive because city jails are overcrowded. So are homeless people usually just get citations, which they then bring to you and other homeless advocates who take them into court to get them dismissed, but now apparently they're being challenged, but you apparently don't have a lot of information on that. On another subject, the Castro was a... usually has a ceremony as a big festivity on Halloween, and there was active attempts to discourage it this year. Have you heard any reports from the Castro about whether they were successful, about how the police were treating people? Because I'm going to be talking about how police were treating people at the Halloween here in Santa Cruz in a moment.
Usually has a ceremony. Yes. Come mourn the death of the Castro Halloween. Last night there was a funeral procession for the dearly departed Halloween Castro.
Mm-hmm.
The funeral procession started at Biela Market and ended at Castro and Market. And there was a eulogy and a burial.
Right. And what I'm saying is, though, and I read that article, too, in the Chronicle, if that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
I'm looking to whether you have heard and got any first-hand reports of how police treated people up there. And were they successful in depopulating the event?
Anybody that was in the costume headed toward the Castro, police were telling them, no party in the Castro, pointing the other way.
Really?
Yes.
Well, police can say anything they want to you. You can ignore them and move on, right?
Exactly.
Do we know what people did? I mean, or have you no indication of that?
I ended up leaving the Castro around 9.
Say that again?
I ended up leaving the Castro around 9 o'clock.
Oh, you left the Castro around 9? Or I'm sorry,
yes, I had to go to another party.
I see. So you chickened out, eh? The police drove
you
away.
No. I participated in the funeral procession. So I was down there when the beginning of the party started, till the cops started showing up more, and people started to disperse. So I decided to leave a couple hours later.
And were the police successful in reducing the number of people in the Castro?
Well, there was a majority of costumes that look alike. People were dressed all the same. They all dressed like cops.
Hmm. Well, that sounds confusing.
Basically, there was a lot of cops there.
And were they successful in, say, reducing the Castro from what it was last year in terms of the number of people?
I have great empathy for the businesses who closed early and took that money loss, because if these small businesses are going to succeed, why should they be forced to close down and lose money? They're trying to make a living like everybody else in this world.
Right, but, I mean, my question again was, were the police successful in driving people away?
Unfortunately, yes.
So there was a significant reduction in the number of people there this year?
Very, very significant reduction.
So do you have any estimates of how much it was reduced by?
Let's see. For about the hour and a half I was up there, I maybe counted about 50, 60 people in costumes.
50?
Compared to 2,000 to 3,000 at 7 o'clock at night.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not good at math, so you can do the math on that.
Wow. Interesting. Well, we're talking with Eli from the Coalition on Homelessness, and I think that I appreciate the update. Anything you want to add before we roll on? Or?
That's it.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you, Eli. And again, if people want more information, is there a website or a phone number they can call if they want to get more info from the Coalition on Homelessness?
There is www.cohsf.org, and the Coalition has a blog. It's cohsf.org/streetsheets.
Okay, give that to
and
me.
And our phone number is 415-346-3740. We're at 468 Turk Street, Turk and Larkin.
And one more time, give me the Coalition website.
cohsf.org.
cohsf.org. Thank you very much, Eli, and appreciate your staying late to be on the air here.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. You have a good evening now.
You too, man.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.
And as before, phone lines are open, as they were actually for the last hour. 427-3772 is the number to call if you want to get on the air and talk about issues that happened in Santa Cruz this year at Halloween, what you saw, what you didn't see. Was it a good Halloween? Was it a safe Halloween for you? Did you feel the police behaved properly? Did you like the sight of all the police you saw? Do you feel more secure when you saw that? I want to hear about that. 427-3772, if you'd like to call in. Again, 427-3772. This is Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, and I will be back after this brief musical interlude. And that was Shuffle the Deck, lyrics and music by Joe Wassel. And it's another song from Voice of the Homeless, an album I perennially pick up when I'm in desperation as to what to play for musical breaks. We have a caller. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, this is Jason Pascal.
Hey, Jason, I've already given you a brief introduction about a half an hour ago, having forgotten you were calling in at 7 and not 6:30.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Robert. How's it going?
Good to hear you, Jason. I know you came up from Venice for a court hearing today. Just what exactly is your crime, sir?
Well, I was officially charged with fighting language.
Fighting language. Now, we've talked about this on the air before, but give me a brief summary of what happened that led you to this situation. And again, try to make it compact because regular listeners know you.
I was in front of the earthquake statue, the commemorative to the earthquake victims.
That's across from the Cinema 9 Theater.
Yes, and I was sitting there, and person named McKay, who works inside of the O'Neill Sporting Goods, called the police department to complain and asked me to move along. So they wanted me to be cited and moved along, but they didn't cite me. So they told me to move. They told me, they said, you have 1 hour to move along.
Now,
there's four other people sitting right there.
Jason, tell me what you were doing. Were you engaging in violent behavior, attacking people walking by? Were you going poo-poo on the sidewalk? Were you... What were you doing that when they told you to move along? What kind of behavior were you engaged in?
Well, I was just telling people not to shop in downtown Santa Cruz. I was saying that it's a classist and a racist city.
Mm-hmm. And
telling people not to shop in town.
So you weren't doing your tarot card reading, but you were doing kind of advocacy, soapboxing kind of stuff.
Yes.
And how were people responding to this? Were you getting people saying right on? Were you getting people saying fuck you? What was the reaction to what you were saying?
They were just busy shopping.
They were too busy shopping, eh?
Yeah, mainly it was like homeless people that really aren't there to make a stir, just sitting there with their little, you know, sign saying, feed me a quarter or whatever. And, you know, then it would be like the downtown association would be walking by. You know, and then the little shoppers, and you know, and then you had the middle-aged white guy with his khaki shorts on and his little rainbow, like.
And give us an example of the. What were you saying? I mean, pretend you're on the corner. You're doing what you did then.
I brought up how they killed Jimmy Klein and how the merchants think that they own the sidewalk and that people should not support storefronts or businesses that support the downtown association, like Keith Haltway, and I was, you know, kind of just telling people what they had done, how they had, you know, had me extradited to New Hampshire, served 4 months in jail over half an ounce of marijuana, and I'm a medical patient. I was just telling my history here in town, you know, from being given tickets for psychic readings where I had a metaphysical permit to the police department to, you know, you name it. You know, I was just bringing it all up because there's been so many issues I've had with the downtown association, the local police department.
Now, was your manner of speech fairly outspoken? You fuckers, why are you, you know, how were you putting the message?
Basically, I was basically saying, I was proclaiming that the city of Santa Cruz kind of has a curse on it, and that it's really cursed, and you know, it's really a racist, classist city, and I was speaking it boldly. I was telling people how I felt, just like those religious people sit outside of Borders and read their religious books. They tell Martin Luther King he was too loud, but, you know, I guess I was swearing, you know.
So
more acceptable. And they hire Angela Davis to sit up there in this all-white area. It's just sick.
So you're an African-American guy.
Right.
And you then were told to move along because we have, of course, our famous unconstitutional but still unchallenged move-along law.
This guy from O'Neill's asked the police to make me move along. So this cop tells me to move along. And in the report, it says that they had already written up a citation, because they expected me not to move. And then when they came back, I moved, but I moved 100 feet, which was right in front of O'Neill's storefront.
Uh-huh.
To move 100 feet. So I moved 100 feet, and it was right in front of me, a sports shop.
Well, hopefully you were 10 feet. Hopefully you were 10 feet away from them, or you'll be violating another downtown ordinance.
They were 25 feet away from the front entrance.
So you were keeping a healthy distance to make sure that you didn't violate the downtown ordinances.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
The edge of the concrete near the. Well, you know, first of all, they should ban cars down on that mall. You know, they talk about noise, shit, but the motorcyclists running their engines at full throttle that they never get a ticket to. But if you have music playing in your car, of course they're going to give you a ticket. You know, it's noise pollution down there from all the cars and running engines. They need to stop it. But the reason why they don't make it a pedestrian mall like it used to be in the cool days is because they want to make it so the merchants can have a drive up. It's totally anti-environmental to get out and walk. Walk up and down the Pacific Mall, you know?
Maybe so. I don't know. I find that the 4th Street Promenade in Santa Monica is as anti-homeless as a street with cars. But then
that's just part of the solution. You know? I'm just saying there shouldn't even be people riding their cars out there. It should be a pedestrian mall.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that pedestrian malls can be just as anti-homeless as, you know, as places with streets. Though, frankly, I agree with you. I like pedestrian malls better in some respects.
Well, you know, they have nothing to blame with themselves. It's a curse. They have Jimmy Klein they killed, you know, and I hope that their homeless population. If I get mega rich,
Jimmy Klein, of course, was a homeless guy who
across the country telling people the wonders of Santa Cruz and to come here and stay here and live on the river and, you know, do their thing.
Because you know, I got to tell you, Jason, we're having a little trouble because, as you suggested earlier, we're afraid that your cell phone is kind of hard to hear.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Man.
No, it's not your fault. It just happens that way. Well, let me see if we can summarize this. So you went to court today because when you were in front of O'Neill's, in your own words, briefly, what happened then?
Let me read you some of the report here.
Okay.
Okay, there was a man named Chapman up that called the police. He was shopping at O'Neill Shopping Center. Chapman had been shopping at O'Neill's. As Chapman left O'Neill, he was accosted by a male subject, later identified as Pascal. Chapman said that Pascal had acted without provocation. Pascal cursed Chapman for shopping at O'Neill's. Chapman asked Pascal what his problem was. Pascal started insulting Chapman and other people who were in the area. Pascal specifically called Chapman and his wife a cunt. Chapman said that he did not believe that Pascal was physically threatening him. Chapman did not believe that Pascal was causing such a scene and using such language, and he most definitely believed that Pascal was a fight. So that's what I got charged with.
So is that they believe that you called him and his wife a cunt, C-U-N-T?
He says I called him that. I don't remember where I said to him, but all I know is that that O'Neill's was talking to a guy who came over and spit on me, and you know, and I was pretty pissed off about it.
Is there any indication of the spitting in the police report?
Yeah, it's mentioned that they have yet to turn over my. I asked for a report. It's given a number, and it's given a case number for me to get. I'm gonna have to. Refer to case 07-06874. It's about his investigation, and this is written by.
Jason, it's hard to hear you because of the phone. But let me see if I can translate here. From your perspective, this guy came out of O'Neill's and spat at you.
Yeah, he came out and said, O'Neill's has been here a hell of a lot longer than you have, you fucking nigger, and he spit at me.
And he called you a fucking nigger.
Yeah, and then got on his bicycle and drove off. I dialed 911. Just then, the police came up. They talked to this guy, Chapman, that said I called him and his wife a cunt, and they talked to the guy that was inside of O'Neill's Sporting Goods, and he signed a complaint named McKay, and also a gentleman that was walking down the street who heard me telling people that they were racist Nazis and this and that, and they said he signed a complaint.
And the nature of the complaint was that you were using fighting words, right?
Yeah, foul language or words that could incite violence.
Well, you have to actually be, you know, intending to incite a fight with your words. I don't think...
Trying to start a fight. I was trying to let people know that this town is racist.
Right, and you were speaking passionately.
Here, as long as they stay down in the flats and don't make a scene, they're fine. You could be here, you know, why don't they ask their names and numbers and where they're from, and they pull them over. But me being an African-American male, the first day in town here, I was pulled over. Where are you from, boy? What you doing? You know, that was my very first day here. And I guess it's because...
Now, wait a minute, Jason. You're not suggesting that there's racial profiling going on?
Absolutely. You know, why do you think they want to get Tony Madrigal out of office? You know, that way they can continue, the Seaside Corporation can continue to house all those illegal aliens down there on the flats. You know, working here. Where's their references and stuff like that? I'm wondering why, as a black male, you know, this town has practically no black people at all. And, you know, they got a couple of them, but any black person, a person named Robert E. Lee, you know, that's like a Jewish person working for a person named Hitler.
You're talking about Bob Lee, our district attorney. Now, you actually were taken to court today by an underling of Bob Lee's. What happened in court today?
Well, they tried to say that it wasn't going to... They wanted to bring me to traffic court. And I told them that I didn't want a traffic court, but I wanted a misdemeanor court case, and I wanted it to be in front of the jury.
Right, because if you're taken to traffic court, you cannot, it's an infraction, and you only get heard by, usually it's what we call a basket case basket.
My pretender went back and talked to the judge and to the district attorney, and then comes out and says, oh, they want you to go down to traffic court. I said, no, I'm not happy with that. I'm going to make a scene here if you don't change that. I want a misdemeanor court. I went to jail, and now I want a trial.
This is in the court of Judge Kangaroo Kelly, right?
Yes, and coming out of term three times, Kelly, or whatever the hell he is.
Well, I know that. Now, who was your public defender?
Crystal Carter.
Crystal Carter was your public defender, and you say that.
I told her, I said, I threatened to fire her because I was very upset.
You saw her mistreat a prior client?
Yeah, well, I saw her rolling her eyes at the prosecution because of some basket case that was in front of the judge. She was crying, and my public defender basically rolled her eyes right at the prosecution.
And what you're saying is that one of
they're friends or something.
Hang on, because I can say it better than you, because people can actually hear me. Crystal Carter, your public defender, who was previously defending a woman who was crying in tears, instead of being sympathetic to her client, rolled her eyes as though she didn't want her defendant to do that. She wanted to have nothing to do with it. And you observed this. Is that what you're saying?
No. The thing is that the woman was being sentenced to 10 days in jail, and she was having a breakdown in front of the judge.
Right.
Fine, please don't send me to jail. Well, everybody knew that she was living up there, but what I saw was my lawyer look at the prosecution and roll her eyes, and then the prosecution going, Your Honor. It's just like there's too much cahoots going on.
Well, aren't you suggesting that
it's okay for them to jaywalk?
Jason, people can't hear you, so let me again intrude here and say, aren't you suggesting that the public defender seemed to be unsympathetic to this woman who, in fact, wasn't one of her clients, but probably it was a defendant. Is that right?
She was being represented by one of those.
One of the public defenders.
Attorneys.
So you didn't like that, and you also didn't like the fact that the public defender, Crystal Carter, wanted to somehow do a deal that would reduce your fighting words misdemeanor 415, I think it is.
No, it would take her responsibility from having to deal with this case.
Right. Instead, because you came all the way up from Venice Beach, where you've lived, to address this issue. You feel you are not merely, it's a false charge, but you also yourself wanted to file a charge because it's illegal to spit at someone on Pacific Avenue. And also calling someone a nigger, although it may be a form of free speech, it also can be a form of threat and harassment.
If a cop gets spit at, go to the hospital and everything else, those cops, what they did was totally inappropriate. They've been trying to get me off of the mall ever since I first came here into town.
So you saw this as part of a continuing campaign of harassment by the police?
Yeah, she's going to go against Tony Madrigal. Shit, they're the ones that imported all the illegal aliens in here anyways. All these ranchers that have been given 93-year leases on land.
Well, here's the deal. I don't know if I agree with you on the illegal aliens. I'm always up for, all groups of oppressed people getting together to say no thanks to this kind of shit when it happens.
Yeah, they're the ones that are pumping their baby here. They've been pumping them in for so long.
But my issue with here is not so much with that, but it's with are the police are using, inappropriate tactics against people, and are they profiling downtown?
At the urging of merchants.
Whoever's urging, but yeah, sure. So you have another court date coming up. You were able to successfully stop them from sending your case to this minor court where you wouldn't have a chance to have a jury trial, and you actually have a jury trial coming up?
Yes, and old Judge Kelly, coming out of retirement three times, Judge Kelly, he was really kind of pissy looking at me because, I wanted this at a misdemeanor court. And, I want to have witnesses. I want to talk to that judge, and I want to make sure that judge hasn't talked to Judge Robert Attic or anything.
And, of course, this comes from the fact that you, in a previous case, heard that presiding judge or elderly judge or big cheese judge Robert Artichoke Heart Attic, as I call him, had made prejudicial statements about you in your case, and that you thought that perhaps Kelly was prejudiced because...
I don't think Kelly's prejudiced, but the judge that I'm going to have to see, because this is a misdemeanor court case, you know, I want to make sure. I don't know if Kelly's heard about it or not, but I just want to find out.
Right. In any case, you have a jury trial coming up now. So for what date?
Well, I have to go for another hearing on the 4th and on the 7th.
At what time and what court?
I think it's 8:30 in the morning.
And this is on January 4th and January 7th?
Yes.
Okay, and in 2008. For those who want to, do you want to give out a number or a website or any kind of contact point for people who want to get in touch with you, or how do you want to deal with any inquiries? Like, I guess they can do it through the Huff line if they want.
Sure, they can do that, or reach me at 870-217-2601.
870-217-2601. Again, that's we're talking with Jason Pascal, African American tarot card reader, who was giving a speech downtown about discrimination, racial and class discrimination. Got moved along, characterized it as a merchant done by O'Neill's, got spat at and reportedly called a nigger. And himself was then arrested for having done fighting words. Did you get all your property back, by the way?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And I know at the time you were concerned about that. I know that a number of the other people on the street felt you were too outspoken, that you disturbed the kind of peace of the streets, you were too upset, and so forth and so on.
Oh, yeah, sure. You can extradite me to New Hampshire, but it's okay for white people to grow thousands of pounds of medical marijuana and then tell the federal government to go to hell.
Well, let me ask you this, Jason. Let me ask you. When you came back to Santa Cruz both this time, and you've been back for a couple of visits to deal with this case, do you have much an impression of the streets? Has the street changed in the last two or three years since you were?
It looks horrible, man. You get people just out there with just signs all up and down. None of the crazy wild performers are there. None of the fun is there. It's kind of just like, you know, come down with your khaki shorts and your Hawaiian shorts and your bohemian white children that are spoiled to death, you know, and let's do some shopping down on the mall. And that's all that they want. They want you to come and they want you to go. They want you to spend your money and they want to make it into Carmel. And I wouldn't purchase any of their little Tutti Frutti products from Rini's Candy or any of those other stores.
Well, Jason, let me ask you, is this any different than it was 3 or 4 years ago? Have you seen any change in any way?
Oh, yeah, it looks a lot more drab. It just the whole feeling of the town. That's why it was an earthquake the other night. You know, they used to be on all those white college kids. I was hoping that building would have fallen in, you know, on those people. Yeah, that's the kind of negativity that they get from people.
Okay, again, what I'm asking is what you saw on the streets,
sitting on the streets with signs that say, give me a quarter so I can go buy a beer.
Yeah.
Give me change so I can go and live my life up on the riverside.
Right, I've seen those things too, but I saw them 3 or 4 years ago as well when you were here.
I thought it was prevalent.
You think it's more prevalent now?
Yeah, it's more prevalent. You know, you used to have I'm not talking about Mr. You know, Morgani, because he's allowed to flout the laws, but the local downtown association loves him.
Yeah, Morgami is the guy who plays in a completely covered with cloth. You often find him in front of the Dale Williams Jewelers playing illegally, but he's tolerated. And in fact, it's fair to say that I would say most street people, although it's not always true, but most performers who have a regular shtick, there are many exceptions to this, but many street performers are regularly ignored by the police and hosts unless they get a complaint. I don't know. I mean, so you'll be coming back in January.
As long as you keep the people laughing so that they can shop.
Keep people laughing. Remember, they're...
From laughing. You know, now, if I was one of those Negroes who was smiling and shucking and jiving and slapping fives, and you know, had a little a white face mask on or something like that with black lips, they'd love me.
Well, perhaps if you were singing about burritos, who knows?
Oh, if I was singing about burritos and living down the flats, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, the singer I'm talking about who sang about burritos is a black guy with a very dark voice, I mean a very deep voice, who sings in front of what was Cottontails, but I guess Cottontails got
it. Yeah, they hated him, too.
Yeah, he comes down from San Francisco, but he's very tame in his own way. He's a little monotonic for my money. Anyway, Jason, I appreciate your calling in, and I'd give you more time, except it's hard to hear you from that phone line.
That's okay, Matt.
You know, if you want to try calling again at some point, we can try it again. I think we got the gist of generally what you're saying. Again, people want to reach you, they can reach you at 870-217-2601. And if they don't want to do long distance, you can call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Yeah, and all money is acceptable for donations for my legal defense on this. I've already been up here four times, I've got to come back up again on the 4th and on the 7th, so anything is helpful. That would really piss him off because it gives me more financial ability to come up here and just chill out.
Okay. Well, next time, Jason, give us a report. You might want to call us from Venice Beach. I understand they're trying to ban all vehicles down there, all RVs and that sort of thing. So maybe you can give us the story about what's happening down there at some point. But
if they own the fucking country. They go clear cut the world. They say they want to talk about environmentalism.
Yeah. Well, listen,
sick.
I appreciate it, but we're catching only every third. I'm missing every third word or something. So thank you very much, and let's try again. And, hey, if I see you downtown, I promise not to spit at you.
I'll be down there tomorrow.
All right, man.
Peace. Bye-bye.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you're listening to. I'm Robert Norse, and that was Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. That was Jason Pascal. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. Let's get it straight, shall we? Now let's turn to what actually happened last night. And we don't have much, I got to tell you. The actual videotape that was done, I understand there was some good video done by Coral Bruhn, who's a singer with SAFE and also an activist as well as an artist, recently lost a loved one, Greg Montoya. We've talked about that on the air. She was down there with the video camera, and so was Bernard Klitzner doing some interviewing. He's with a human rights organization. Thank you, Bernard. Thank you, Coral, for braving the police, braving the fog, braving the crowds, and so forth. Here's a caller, though. First, who may have a comment or two. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
I am.
Yes.
Robert.
Yes.
How's it going?
Well, it's interesting to hear a strong, clear voice after that crackly cell phone. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I wonder if you had any more information about the city hall got hit last night.
Oh, you know, interesting. I only know what I read in the urinal.
Me too. That's all I read. Evidently, they arrested one juvenile.
Yeah, you know, I was coming out of the courthouse yesterday when Steve Perez of Channel 48, is it? Or what the hell is it? Anyways, some TV channel.
46,
there we go. He asked me what I knew about this latest vandalism thing. I was busy talking to somebody else, I said something like the city is going to the dogs, but of course what I should have said was, oh, you mean they finally arrested John Wallace, the ranger who's running around, you know, destroying everyone's tent in the pogo nip? My God, at last! Mm-hmm. But of course I wasn't that quick on the draw.
Right.
Well, you know, I haven't got a lot of information about this, and I suppose it'll be, it was out in the Sentinel today, and I'm actually going to the Sentinel website as we speak. I think there's some comments.
Yeah, you should, like, mention it. Maybe other people know about it and know who got arrested. Because evidently they tried to stop and question a couple individuals, and they ran, and who knows what they could have been doing. But the way the Sentinel puts it, it sounds like they're automatically already guilty.
Right.
It was the same MO as last time, I guess. Anarchy symbols, and stop the camping ban, something about the police or something, I'm not sure.
Right, and
supposedly broke a few windows, I don't know.
I'm looking at the article. Police responded to a burglar alarm at 1 a.m. to find broken windows and an anarchy message, an expletive about the police department, and a statement on the city's sleeping ban spray painted on the side of the building.
At least no Sieg Heils, right?
And I don't hear about there any Sieg Heiling. I guess they didn't consult with me before they did their graffitiing. This is at Santa Cruz City Hall. Uh-huh. I mean, at least they're taking their graffitiing to City Hall, although maybe that's a mistake. Maybe they should be taking their graffitiing to the businesses downtown because, you know, the impetus for this kind of anti-homeless law that they're concerned about does come from the businesses. Actually, I will no doubt be denounced for suggesting that, and I'm not really suggesting
right.
businesses be graffitied. I don't think that's particularly effective. But, you know, if you want to, you certainly can, if you want to hold the people accountable, I would say the businesses are one of the main culprits here, and they should hold themselves accountable if they find angry reactions to this. If their response is simply repression, repression, and more repression, I think repression breeds resistance, or I sure as hell hope it does, you know.
Yeah, whatever, people express themselves in many different ways, but I think it's kind of pointless to just go and destroy city property to do that. I think maybe hanging a banner or doing what, like, the Department of Corrections does when they go and change billboards around, I think is much more effective than...
Oh, it is, and it appeals to a middle-class audience that's nervous about violence.
Or
even damage to property, though, frankly, they're not too nervous about the damage to homeless property, which happens every night.
Not at all.
And even though that results in not just, you know, having to, you know, appropriate some money for a new window or whitewash the building, it may cause real health and safety effects with real people. That doesn't bother your middle-class person watching this on TV. And the sad thing is that we have to run all this through the middle-class filter to say, well, you know, what's going to play with Mr. and Ms. Middle-class out there? I mean,
right.
I don't really want to do that. And if somebody's going to say, well, you know, aren't you advocating violence or aren't you advocating property destruction? I'm saying that no, I wouldn't be stupid enough to do that, but not necessarily because it isn't a good idea. I mean,
right.
frankly, I'm going beyond what you're saying, Bob. I'm saying that, you know, if you're powerless, you use the tools you have at hand. And sometimes it can be very effective. You know, riots and burning down the cities in the 60s produced a lot of money pumped that way. And, I mean, it also, of course, damaged a lot of black businesses and a lot of other stuff. So, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of complex issues involved here. But
right.
to have a sort of a pristine, I'm so pure, I'm so peaceful, I never do anything illegal, you know, or any of that sort, when you have a massive illegal war going on overseas that you're colluding in, supporting, and, you know, you have contractors that are the city, Rotkin, and the Rotkin-Matthews Council, the McKay group that is, you know, doing all kinds of activities over in Afghanistan, and we're hiring them for desal plants over here in Santa Cruz. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's not all black and white, my son.
Yeah.
As the Swami would say.
It's kind of hard to change anything sometimes. I mean, you can't even get these damn planes to stop from spraying people, I guess.
Right. I mean, the power is in the hands of a few people in this society, it seems like. And, I mean, that can change if enough of us mobilize. But it happens increasingly so rarely that, you know, you're going to get these outbursts of people who take things into their own hands in rather small, often ineffectual ways that then those who pander to conservative, obsession with property can use and say, oh, see, the vandals are coming. So,
right.
But the answer is I've got no new information about that, and I didn't
I'll go and let other people call in. Maybe somebody has more info.
Can
on
we have a couple of vandals calling in, please, and possibly a police officer. Too.
There you go.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Bob, I cut you off, but I thought you were gone. So call again if you'd like, and anybody else can call, too, 427-3772. That's a story by Genevieve Bookwalter, and there's also some comments online on that story if you happen to be online. A guy called Sista says they got the wall by the bike path close to Long's Drugs, too. And then some guy says they need to go after this with the full extent of the law, no tolerance. Last time it happened, the mayor makes a statement, oh, it's really sad when people do something like this. Someone should have mentioned anyone caught defacing public property will be prosecuted under the full extent of the law. You know, maybe that will convince some people that doing such acts have consequences, regardless of the criminal's age. You know, let's lock them up. And Pat Kittle says, if you think the bums trash City Hall, you should see what they do to our local wildlands. And again, he's assuming that somehow these are homeless bums, or he's assuming that these are people who are, I mean, there's the same people did this who are somehow trashing the parks or the Poganip, which I don't see the evidence for. I don't know. I mean, maybe he has information I don't. Get them out of our forests and you'll discourage the constant influx of bums from elsewhere. So homeless people are bums, you know. It's kind of like calling Negroes niggers or Latinos wops. Or is it Spicks? I can never remember which. Or Beaners. It's interesting to follow some of these comments. One guy wants to station a police guard in front of the city. Mostly these comments are from people, a rather small group of people, I think. Although, yeah, I think it's pretty much a lot of the same people appear. I sometimes post on the Sentinel comments section. Another story that drew my interest sufficiently that I actually wrote a response is a story about Edward Hui, or Hoy, who was sentenced to 1 year in county jail. And I actually put it up on Indie Bay as well as commenting on the Sentinel's comment line, because that's what you can do. You can go onto the Sentinel story and comment. And this is a story about a guy, it reads, a West Side man arrested last December after deputies found 100 pounds of pot in his house and a $500,000 cash in a storage locker, was sentenced Thursday to 1 year in the county jail. Edward Hoy, 48, had pleaded no contest to charges. He was defended, apparently not very well, by Ben Rice, seeking leniency. At pleading in September, he remained adamant that most of the marijuana was destined for medicinal users. Hui, a medicinal user himself, said in September that the money he was holding included his own compensation for providing pot to the Greenway dispensary, payments for growers, and cash he'd set aside to pay taxes. But Hui admitted had September that he augmented, it's a little garbled the story, that he augmented his income with sales to a few friends and associates in other states, some of whom he says were former California residents who used pot medicinally. And the comments originally were all sort of, what the fuck is a stupid waste of money with the drug war? I wrote a long comment to the effect of which people who've been following me on the radio know this, that what's happening here is DA Bob Lee has decided that all clubs throughout California are illegal, and therefore he can go after anybody who sells marijuana to medical users, even legitimate medical users with cards, unless they're a caretaker. Then apparently, like with Wham, where Wham is a very close kind of caretaker relationship with its clients or its collective members, they are immune from prosecution. But otherwise, all clubs are a fair game. But of course, Greenway, which is a favored status in the city, and Ken Sampson's cannabis club won't be gone after, because Bob Lee doesn't want to run afoul of the political strings here. And I don't think he should, of course. But the idea that other people who do it, but who do it legitimately to medical users, should be subjected under this theory to being arrested and prosecuted is ridiculous. Obviously, the whole idea of the drug war is ridiculous to start with. But let's even take this small area. Santa Cruz County, 1993, had I think it was 60 or 70% vote in favor of advisory measure decriminalizing marijuana as far as medical use goes. And then, of course, the entire state passed Proposition 215, and by a serious majority here in Santa Cruz. So if we have a district attorney who is ignoring this mandate to harass people, probably to get funding from state and federal medieval anti-drug war, or I should say anti-drug warriors, who want to ramp up the drug war because they have an ideological bias, or because they're making some profit off it, or because their religion tells them to, whatever. We don't want this guy in office. We don't want this done. The Board of Supervisors should be dealing with this issue by issuing guidelines that direct the sheriffs, although I admit the sheriff is elected independently, but still, that direct the policy of the county is that people who supply people with medical marijuana simply not be prosecuted, period. We need that in this county, and the fact that nobody is advocating that except me, I find, makes me hoarse, because I have to keep shouting it all the time. It's ridiculous. So I wrote a long comment on the Sentinel website about it, and I also made the same comment on a somewhat longer comment, actually, on IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, which I also recommend to new listeners as a good website to go to, because I think it's very relevant. I also note here, as I look through comments, that for the first time since I've written on this Sentinel website, they don't attack me personally after my comment, which is amazing. Almost every comment I make, I mean, Jane Immler, as you may know, those of you regular listeners, a homeless advocate, died a week ago in her home in Missouri, and I've talked about her good work in the community. my writing about it immediately provoked a storm of hostility toward me, not from people who cared about Jane Immler, but from people who decided they're just going to take pot shots at me, which is done a lot. You know, I mean, you can't avoid it if you're saying things that some people don't like. Particularly if they don't like the message, the best thing is to assault the messenger, because particularly if you can't deal with the message, then that's the way to go. Or you remain silent, ignore the messenger, laugh at him, you know, arrest him if he shows up at the ACLU with a sign, as Mike Rotkin tried to do. You want to, you know, get past the obvious glaring question, why are you arresting people for selling medical marijuana to people who need it? Why are you arresting people for sleeping when they need it? You know, why are you arresting people for being in public parking lots and doing nothing wrong? And the answer is always, you know, we don't have to answer those questions because, you know, Robert Norris. You know, I mean, it's a diversion from what the issue is. And it's, you know, the answer to that is that people do that to you. I suggest to you that what you do is you ignore it and get back to the issue. But make sure you're talking to people who have some interest in the issue or don't know about it, because you can't argue with some people who really want to vent on you and who regard you as, you know, being the arch fiend and so forth. Anyway, it still looks like the breaking news, the judge clears the path for aerial spraying to begin of the pheromone tomorrow. Actually, it'll be tomorrow, Sunday. I got a call that there was some late breaking news on this, that there was a change in this, that there was a delay in the spraying, and I'm looking to see if this has happened. 5/11. And again, it's interesting to read go to the Sentinel website, look at the news stories, and go down to the comments, because they're very interesting. You can make a comment of your own. And there's some interesting debate and discussion around the issue of the light brown apple moth and the effect of spraying. And there's still debate about it. Don't blame the judge. Very long back and forth on the issue. But I don't yet see any indication that, as one caller suggested, that this has been postponed. So I think it's still going on. Everybody says it's crazy. But nobody knows what to do. I mean, you know, I'm not suggesting people go and blow up the planes that are going to do this, or occupy the airfields, or lie down in the... I don't know what you can do. I mean, you know, you can propose a variety of solutions as to what to do. But the real problem is that bureaucrats have such power, and some people in positions of wealth and power have such power that they will do what they will do unless the community stands up and says no, and has to organize itself fairly quickly, and has to organize itself. If it can't organize itself, then often what happens is minorities organize themselves. I don't mean racial minorities. I mean activists take action, you know. And sometimes all people can think of to do is write "end the sleeping ban" on City Hall, you know, which, yeah, not very effective, no. But sometimes when there's silence, breaking the silence means something, even if it's an act of vandalism. And graffiti, of course, which is treated as vandalism, where you're talking about, you know, like artistic graffiti and so forth, is a form of cultural activity by a lot of groups, I mean, that are underrepresented. And anyway, let's leave that subject, because I think I made the point. Here's a little from the Copwatch stuff from last night, which there's not much of it. As I'm hoping to have more of it on Sunday. The show returns at 9:30. I should say there's another. My next show will be at 9:30, from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon, in the morning to the early afternoon. So check me out then for more of this. Hopefully I'll have some more tape, because we were fortunate enough to catch a police assault on a guy. And then the assault was masked and surrounded by 12 to 17 cops. And it was an interesting situation. I was rather upset about the whole thing. But here you get just a couple of things that happened before that. And I guess a little commentary.
about 10 to 9, a little less, actually, 15 to 9, on the last day of October 2007. I'm here with the infamous, well, perhaps a little known.
Say it.
Her name is Coral. I mean, we've got to let her be known. We're cop watching tonight, and we're parked in the county parking lot heading across the bridge in the fog, the footbridge, because the entire downtown area is not only inaccessible to traffic, but you can't park there either. I guess that two kind of go together. We are only an hour late for our cop watching activity, or actually only 45 minutes late, but hopefully the cops will still be there, and hopefully they won't need much watching. Carl, any predictions as to what we're going to see tonight?
I predict we'll see a lot of costume people.
A safe prediction, surely. What about the intent? What actually are you out here for? Why are you doing this?
I am radically insane.
Well, that goes without saying. But what is your objective as a sane, insane person?
I'm going to record through the use of the camcorder we've been charging with a new battery charger, all the events that might happen if cops are allowed to, I can't think of the phrase.
Are you trying to say?
Gone wild, you know, like girls gone wild, except cops go wild. You've got to record this.
So you're afraid you're going to see some untoward instances of police misconduct?
Yeah, missing in action. They don't know, what one hand is doing when the other hand is doing something else.
Well, we'll see what happens. So, Coral, you say that your friend Josh got a ticket the other day?
Yeah, he told me he was sitting over here by the county building near the edge of the San Lorenzo.
Where near the edge of the river?
Posted. Yeah, the river.
Mm-hmm.
River is filled or not filled up. Where the river would be if there was a river, and $250 ticket citations are being given out now.
Oh, to keep people away from the so-called reforested or no camping or we've ruled people can't come into these zones zone?
That's probably the one.
Okay. And what does he intend to do about this?
He was taking photos of where it was and the signs, and he was getting help from an attorney, which I do not know who from who.
Interesting to hear an attorney helping him with an infraction ticket.
He got a lot of citations for having his dog not on a leash in his own neighborhood, too.
I see.
That's been going on a lot lately.
So,
we don't have to show your face. Please.
We're both attorneys, too. I told him you got a $400 ticket for half.
Hang in there, folks. We're actually coming into an audible dialogue, so.
Yeah, it's about 9:25. We're talking with
Elizabeth
and
Jonathan.
And Elizabeth, you have a costume on, which is a kind of a coat, some shoes, a bandana around your hair, a wig. What does your costume represent?
Amy Winehouse.
And this is a character in a television or movie series?
She's a singer.
And you say that a police officer took this very seriously.
Apparently.
What happened?
They came up and they grabbed me and they took my
costume
away. They took my prop away and then cited me for a ticket.
What was your prop?
My prop was an empty bottle.
And what kind of a bottle was it?
I believe it was, just an empty bottle.
In a paper bag, just a bottle in a paper bag.
Was there any liquid in it?
No. No liquid.
How many police officers were there who approached you?
One came and got me, and then I was encircled by like three, and then they cordoned off my husband.
And there was like six by that point.
Yeah.
It was very scary. I mean, they wouldn't let me near my wife while they were doing this. They literally pushed me away and threatened me if I tried to go near my wife while they were talking to her.
And was it Santa Cruz Police Department? Did you notice which kind of officer?
I believe it was at Santa Cruz.
But she was circled by California Highway Patrol. So the Santa Cruz police officer was citing her But the California Highway Patrol was circling
well,
that
she looks
police
like
officer.
An obvious menace. The woman is a very dangerous character.
She is. You don't
look
know.
At those teeth and those boots.
Well,
how, what are you? What are you? 5 foot? 5 foot eight? 5 foot five?
Yeah, I'm about 5'5" on a good day.
Very scary experience because we just came down here to enjoy ourselves, and that was part of her costume.
And you're dressed, of course, as a painter,
Bob Ross. And it was $400. And that's a lot of money.
Well, no. Anyway, it's not going to ruin our night.
Don't let it ruin your night, but it's very important to let people know about this because it sounds like bullshit. It definitely is bullshit.
Overdoing it.
Well, not only overdoing it, it's a phony ticket. If it's not a real open container, it's a phony ticket. So, have you got this is for not for off air. This is off air. Can you be reached later by phone?
Yeah, since it's off air, it goes off air. But I'm just going to give a few of my observations from last night. And then hopefully we'll be able to play some tape that we took. There were three of us, only three cop watching. I announced this on free radio. We had a tabling 4 days before at the bookshop Santa Cruz during the afternoon and the boycott bigotry tabling, which has become kind of traditional every Sunday at 2:00. And I also posted something on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, about the cop watch, and there were many thumbs up about the cop watch. There was a lot of people who were very positive about it, but nobody showed up to be helpful in any direct sense or called the line to be a part of the cop watch. So that's, you know, a factor to be considered. Many people took the little flyer we gave out, which was a sort of a 3 or 4 line flyer, which gave a phone number. It said, report any police misconduct, racial profiling, class, you know, selective enforcement. A lot of big words, actually. And it was in English and not in Spanish, which was unfortunate. But we were, again, working with limited resources. Hopefully, in the future, if we do this, we'll have more people interested, or perhaps the next group that does this will have folks who are more, you know, more ready, more interested, more fully funded, you know, with more time and so forth. A particular tip of the hat to Bernard Klitzner, the human rights organization, who waited an hour and 15 minutes for us to show up. We were delayed we had to prepare cop watch banners on our hats and so forth, which we had. And we had a large sign, which actually I think was which prepared by SAFE activist Valerie Christie, Cop Watch Halloween, which told people about Cop Watch. And people saw the sign, and they came over and asked for the literature. And there were some people who, again, had some accounts, which sometimes we got and sometimes we didn't. And we hope people would call in with their accounts. But thus far on the Huff line, nobody has. So it looks like if either the police were very mellow, which might have been true generally, but I saw several instances and heard several instances of cases where the police were out of control, as far as I was concerned, or should have been controlled. It shouldn't have happened. And I will actually be playing the tape from one of these instances, hopefully on Sunday, if we can get the audio portion off the videotape, because we took video of it, or I should say Coral did. But what happened was some guy was standing on a railing or on the flat area that surrounds some of the 3 or 4 large, long planters, which there are not many left, but there, I think there are 3 or 4 in the entire downtown area. I think the one in front of the Pacific Trading Company. And we were at that intersection where the Pacific Trading Company is on one corner, and I think there's Rosie McCann's and so forth. And we were in the middle of the street with our signs and with our tape recorders and our video and our camcorder. And this guy, I jumped up and he was somewhat drunk. He was making some kind of a speech. And then we saw police running after him, throwing him down, pushing his face into the ground, knees on his back. And I started asking them, what's the charge? What is he charged with? What are they charging you with? At which point, well, it took a little while, but then within about a minute, there were, again, 12 to 17 cops, and that sounds like a lot of cops, but they were in a large semicircle around this guy. Of course, I was shouting rather loudly, drawing a crowd, saying, look, what's going on here? What? Explain to us what's happening. You know, I mean, just come and watch. I was inviting the crowd to come and watch. And nobody was interfering with the arrest. This is a pretty frightened town with respect to the police. They're not going to fight with the police. Police are heavily armed. There were many jurisdictions there. You don't hear of many policemen shot or injured on duty in Santa Cruz or in the county. Here are other people who deal with the police sometimes get into that condition, but not usually the police. There are exceptions, but that's not the usual thing. And certainly not for this kind of thing where you have people are just out celebrating. I could be wrong, and if somebody wants to correct me on this, they have some specific information. Otherwise, I'd like to hear about it. Anyway, this incident, this guy was, he kept saying, I don't know what I'm being arrested for. And I kept saying, what are you being arrested for? Asked them, what am I being arrested for? And they didn't answer him that I could hear. He said they shoved me back physically. Officer, his name is Anui, or Inoue, I think his name was, shoved me back. He had his name tag on appropriately. He shoved me inappropriately. He stopped shoving me when I said, I have a right to be here. I'm watching this. And I believe, as I said, some of this was on videotape. So we'll see if that comes out. Then an interesting thing happened. As I started shouting about it, a couple of guys who I wondered if they were just police sympathizers, they were older men, or they were undercover cops. It was hard to tell. At one point in the evening, I met up with Rico Thunder, who suggested look at their shoes and see how well designed their shoes are, whether they're well polished and so forth. Good suggestion to determine if you're dealing with an undercover cop. Although I think the undercover cops had learned to get better shoes, so get it together there, officers, in all your drug war exciting activities. But I was told, oh, why are you shouting at this guy's an asshole? Did you see what he did? And I said, no. Did you tell us what he did? He says, oh, he was an asshole. He was causing trouble. I said, well, what specifically was he charged with? I don't know. Did you see? No, but I know he was an asshole. This sort of thing. So I got a chorus of two or three guys trying to drown me out. And, of course, I ignored them and talked to other people. And that's what you should do. Don't fight with people who have a different opinion. Whether they're the police, provocateurs, or just ordinary people of a different perspective. They got a right to their view, you got a right to yours, and that was what I was doing out there. So, we're reaching the end of Bathrop's Pier's broadsides. So, I think it may be time for another brief musical number, and then maybe, actually, maybe I have a few announcements to make before I wend my way home. Let's see here. A Huff member brought to my attention the fact that in this article on vandalism by the Sentinel, this new vandalism, the name of Homies for the Homeless comes up in the article, which is really, there's no indication that, as far as I know, that any of the people who did this vandalism or the previous vandalism were Homies for the Homeless. In fact, I would say quite the contrary. Those people are very much concerned with being lawful. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on free radio.
Robert, Uncle Dennis here. I just wanted to say that I was downtown last night and witnessed a bust going on.
Uh-huh.
It was an older Mexican gentleman who had apparently a large beer bottle, probably a 50, in his possession, and probably like 7 or 8 police officers surrounded him, took his 50 away, which was about half drink, half empty, and proceeded to arrest him and haul him away. They didn't treat him particularly badly. He was drunk off his ass, but they did certainly overpower anyone they encountered.
Right. What's your reaction to that, Dennis? Did you feel that that was a kind of an appropriate police approach for dealing with a crowd in an event of this kind? How did you feel about that?
Well, I thought that, 7 or 8 officers to arrest one rather drunk older gentleman was probably a little over the top.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with you based on your account and also what I saw with this other guy who admittedly was trying to get away, but they'd stopped him, and then they suddenly had, a dozen or more cops surrounding the 2 or 3 officers who were holding him, or 3 officers, I think, holding him down. It gave one a sense of fear, and I guess maybe that's what they want because they want you to follow orders. I don't know.
Well, to me, it was more like the police were really afraid because, you know, normally there would just be two or three people arresting someone on a normal street on a normal day. But, you know, here they had eight guys surrounding a rather small, rather drunk man. And, you know, it looked to me like the police were more afraid of any of things that were happening or might have happened or might happen. So,
yeah. Well, maybe that's what it was. I mean, thanks for the report.
Thanks, Robert. See you in a minute.
All right. And, of course, Uncle Dennis's show is coming up next, From the Cream to the Dregs. And that kind of solves my problem as to what to how to finish this off, because I've got about 2 minutes left. If you saw anything on Halloween that struck you, either positive or negative, and you want to pass it on to me, I'd like to hear it. 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is my off-air number, so do give me a call and let me know about that. Let's see here. Lots of articles on the Middle East. Sunday we're going to be interviewing Peggy Lee Kennedy. She's an activist from Venice Beach who has done several successful lawsuits there defending the rights of poor and homeless people and street performers. And we're going to talk to her more about what's going on with the latest Venice Beach repression. We'll talk about the increased cost of the Jones lawsuit, the lawsuit that will hopefully end the sleeping ban, but that has been made more difficult because the Jones decision has been depublished. And that'll be an issue we'll be talking about on Sunday. Excuse me if I'm able to get over the hiccups. So do come back at 9:30 at that time. And for a record of what's coming up in terms of some events that might be of local interest, do go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, for some calendar events and some updates. I thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and I will soon be having some music from Uncle Dennis, so stay tuned.
Back when I was drinking, I'd crash my truck into the side of a new Rolls Royce. I've been stabbed by a fella with a bowie knife for seeing this girl named Joyce. I got run over just crossing the street. I lost a finger in Ohio. My wife ran off with my best friend John. I took a bullet to Mexico. I've been chased by large crowds of angry people, not knowing exactly why. Got thrown in jail in three different states. It's enough to make a grown man cry. And that was just one day. That was just one day. That was just one day. Thank God I quit drinking. That was just one day. That was just one day. And that was just one day. That was just one day. Thank God I quit drinking, that was just one day. When I was drinking, I wrote bad checks to the man at the IRS. Then things got bad and I kept running from town to town, I guess. Got in 34 fights and 13 bars and I only won about two. Broke three ribs and an arm in Dallas, but that was nothing new. Then a Texas lawman named Bill McCoy, standing tall and mean, insisted I take a nice long ride in his black and white limousine. That was just one day. That was just one day. That was just one day. Thank God I quit drinking, that was just one day. Ago, I ain't touched a drop since then. You can check downtown, my record's clean, but I remember when. Back when I was drinking, I'd crash my truck into the side of a new Rolls Royce. I've been stabbed by a fella with a bowie knife for seeing this girl named Joyce.
got run over just crossing the street. I lost a finger in Ohio. My wife ran off with my best friend John. I took a bullet to Mexico. Been chased by large crowds of angry people, not knowing exactly why. Got thrown in jail in three different states. It's enough to make a grown man cry. That was just one day. That was just one day. That was just one day. Thank God I quit drinking. That was just one day. And that was just one day. That was just one day. That was just one day. Thank God I could drink, and that was just one day.
Thank you. And welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm Uncle Dennis here, sitting in Robert's pre-warmed seat in our underground dungeon here. It is, of course, All Hallows Day, last night being All Hallows Eve. And Robert told you about all the goings-on down in Santa Cruz downtown. But Uncle Dennis was down there. I hope you, most people were having a good time. A lot of people were making some overtime last night. I'm sure there were thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars being earned by literally hundreds of police officers, both uniformed and undercover, who were present on the scene. I hope they had a good time earning all that money. Not sure what all they had to do. There were a few things that happened. Robert told you about some. I saw a few. But basically, of the rest of the people, 99.999% of the people were having a really great time, and I think that's a good thing that Santa Cruz can have an unorganized event that's really fun stuff anyway. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Hopefully you can hang around for the next few hours. I'll play you some music. 9 o'clock, we'll have the Earth First Update, environmental news for you. And then, of course, around 10 o'clock, we'll have our Spotlight Group of the Week. But right now, we're going to play you some old favorites from way back. Led Zeppelin.
Used to do. Ah!